Welcome back to Time Out Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. It was 2017. I was 11 living in Davis, a land of bicycles, farmers markets, and community events. Soccer was already a very popular sport in town with thousands of players in the community. But despite Davis's soccer culture, we didn't have a club team that could be a home for our local soccer fanatics. Enter FC Davis. The club was founded by Adam Lewin to give the city of Davis a semi-pro soccer team that we can all call our own. The club launched its men's team, and then they began working on starting a women's team to give the countless high-level female athletes in the area a club to play in. Once this was done, the club started developing community initiatives such as its internship program for high school and college students. In its first couple of years, its NPSL side won 2 conference titles, qualified for the US Open Cup, and had 3 players move on to professional ranks. But just last summer, the FC Davis men's team announced it would be moving competition from the NPSL to the United Premier Soccer League. The UPSL is one of the D4 leagues in America, along with the National Premier Soccer League, or the NPSL, which is composed of more than 400 teams from around the country, and is considered the largest and most competitive pro development league in North America. FC Davis's women's team competes in the Women's Premier Soccer League. The WPSL is the largest D4 women's league in the world, composed of over 150 teams across the United States. The club's UPSL regular season play kicks off in March. The regular season lasts through June, with UPSL national playoffs in late June through July. The WPSL regular season kicks off in May, with most of the season taking place in June, and then the national playoffs beginning in July. For the past 3 years, I've spent many spring and summer evenings as the on-field announcer for FC Davis's home games, which take place at Playfields Park in Davis. From students to fans of the game, the club provides a home for those who love soccer and want to get involved building their local club. So our guest on today's episode is Adam Lewin from FC Davis, who tells us about the club's past season and gives us a preview of what fans can expect for the fall of 2024 and the upcoming spring season. Our place of the week is Switzerland, where the oldest soccer club in continental Europe, the Lausanne Football and Cricket Club, was formed back in 1860. Up next is Fire, the official UEFA Euro 2024 song by Benduza, One Republic, and Leonie. We got our secrets hidden inside our bones. Starlight that bleeds when all of the lights come on. It's a beautiful miracle how you lift me up when I feel low. Beautiful everglow, now we're shining like a sea of gold. Lost in all You're listening to Time Out Radio on 95.7 KDRT. So joining us now, I've had the privilege of having him on now as almost an annual tradition, is Adam Lewin, who is the FC Davis owner. The past couple of years at the end of the season, which ends about just this time of the year, Adam and I usually have a conversation about, you know, recapping some of the moments of the FC Davis women's and men's season. Both of them just recently wrapped up play. The men playing in the UPSL, finishing with a record of 4-4-2, 4 wins, 4 losses, and 2 draws. And the women's team had a pretty great season for themselves. They went undefeated in the WPSL Pac North Conference, finishing with 6 wins and 3 draws. Ultimately falling short of the first place crown to crosstown rivalry California Storm, but that was only by goal differential. So Adam joins us now after a successful season for FC Davis for sure. Adam, it's great to chat with you again, man. How's it going?
Everything's going good, and we have to start off this year with congratulating you on getting into Cal. Even though you're not going to be an Aggie, we still love you,
and we wish I'll always be an Aggie by heart. That's for sure.
Cal Bear for 4 years, and then back to the Aggies, right?
Yes, we'll see about that. Yeah, we'll see. So yeah, let's start off with recapping by the men's team, which, you know, finished their action previously because they started their season a little bit earlier. So this was the first full, I guess, calendar year that the men's team had been playing under the UPSL, the United Premier Soccer League, which was a little bit different from years before, as, you know, the men's team had been playing in the NPSL since it had been founded back in, 2017. And so how would you say you would think about the transition from one league to another? How do you think the players and the coaches were able to get with the change, you know, because it's going to be a little bit, you know, it's not anything, you know, too crazy, but you're going to be playing different teams, rosters, the way they're built might be a bit different. So how do you assess that?
Yeah, so anytime you transition leagues, it's always something that, you know, it can impact a variety of different fronts. For us and for, you know, quite a few of the other teams that were in the MPSL that moved over to the UPSL, there were a lot of positives transitioning leagues. And, you know, aside from the players and the coaches who are usually, they're totally fine. They just like getting out there and playing in front of the home crowds and competing for titles. I think, you know, most of them don't really care what league they play in. They love being out there and they're there for the competition. But, you know, I guess from an organizational standpoint, the great thing about switching leagues, and one thing that we definitely wanted, was one, a longer calendar season. So playing in a full year, it has its challenges, but it also has its benefits in terms of keeping a cohesive group together and bringing some younger players on board in the fall, which we use as more of the testing grounds for a lot of players before we enter in the spring. We just take that season on in a little bit of a more competitive light. So the benefits were great, being able to play in both seasons and moving players around and seeing what works best for us. And then clearly, I think one of the biggest benefits is the localization of the games, like being able to play Dixon. Like that's huge, not only for us, but also for them, having those rivalries built in within the league. And we led off with them this year. There's a huge crowd out there. It was a great environment. And if you know anything about our organization, like we like local, everything from our players to our competition, that's what makes the game fun. Is if Dixon has a team, Vacaville has a team, hopefully one day Woodland has a team, you know, we have a team in Davis. So it helps tremendously just getting people excited when you're only playing Bay Area teams. It could be, you know, it's fun playing San Francisco and those big market teams, but it's usually more fun to play, you know, the person that, you know, you see at the supermarket every week.
Yeah, I know in years past, a lot of the Davis fans have been accustomed to, you know, some of those big marquee matchups against El Farolito from San Francisco and, you know, those other teams that still bring it to you. Yeah. And whereas, you know, this past year, you know, you got some of these almost crosstown or next town over rivalries that are going to build as years go on with, you said, Dixon and then even Davis Legacy. So you got that crosstown rivalry going. So, you know, you mentioned how you like that cohesiveness between the fall and the spring season with some of the younger players, and, you know, you kind of keep a lot of the group together for the spring. So this will be, you know, testing how the spring season moves over to the fall. How do you think that that's going to work out in terms of building a roster? What should fans expect the difference from the spring to now the fall season as we start in late August to September?
Yeah, so I think, you know, usually we try to keep a core together. That's always the goal, is keeping a core group of players together, which we've been lucky enough to have. Usually players at our level, most of them go on usually 4 to 6/7 year cycles. It just depends on, you know, what happens in life. Do they move away from NorCal? Some of them take a job in NorCal, but farther away from Davis. So the start is usually you try to always say, hey, who are 12-ish players that we can bring back that's going to have the core of our club? They understand the ins and outs. They understand the ethos. They understand the culture. They understand the environment. All that is really important because that gets passed down to the younger or newer group of players that are coming through. And then after we get our 12 core players, we then start bringing guys on just to see how they do. Everything from local high school players, because what I love about any of these D4 leagues is that the gauge for being able to play is if you're good enough. You know, there's no prejudice of how old you are. It's simply, are you good enough on the field? And that's how it should be. And so if we bring a 16, 17, 18 year old in there and they're great, guess what? They're better than the 25 year old. They're going to play. And so that's what we love about the fall. You know, you still have to do good. And you still have to put a good team out there, because if you don't, you're going to get ran over by some of these other teams. But it's more so how you incorporate some of those younger or newer players into the team. You surround them with players who have been through it. So you're not just have 8 new young players out there, because that just wouldn't be a good idea. So I'd anticipate a much similar lineup to what they saw in the spring, but there's certainly going to be a lot more influx and outflux and not as many regulars every single week that they see in there.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, what would you say, building off as you go into your second full calendar year in the UPSL, what would you say your goal is to build with SC Davis? Like, are you trying to chase a UPSL championship, you know, or are you more so trying to get some of the best young players in town and kind of grow them so they can move on to the bigger leagues?
Yeah, you know, there's always dual goals. I mean, when we're in ownership meetings or, you know, we're talking to coaches and finding best practices, the best organizations do both at the same time. So you certainly, you have to groom the younger talent and expose them to the game at a higher level, but you can't just throw them out there to the Lions. No pun intended. So if, you know, you make sure that they have an onboarding ramp, but you still want to put them in a position where the better players are showing them, like, this is what you need to do in order to try and accomplish success in this league. And as we know, you know, every year, you don't go on the field at the very first game, the very first practice in preseason and say, hey, we just want to be out here. The goal is always to win a title. But there's so much that goes into a season. You know, a lot of our earlier games were just, you know, brutally unlucky. And then towards the end of the season, kind of the luck shifted a little bit in our favor. So we went from not getting results off of late goals and games to scoring the late goals later in the season and making the playoffs. So yeah, it's definitely a mix of the two. We always search for the best young talent. And I think that's what's great about our organization, is we always get questions and inquiries from players asking if they can join in a training session or if they can come experience something within the club that'll help them become better as a player, while at the same time always striving high to try and win titles.
Yeah, and I guess looking back now, you can point out some things that you liked or you think could be better. What would you say was sort of the biggest challenge through 1 year in the UPSL, and how do you think you were able to overcome those?
Yeah, I think there's always a couple things. One is the UPSL has some midweek games. Understanding how to maneuver those midweek games is something that's critical, because we had 2 weeks in a row where we played Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday. And then one we played, I believe it was like Sunday, Wednesday, Friday. Mm-hmm. So learning how to maneuver those games, especially when the first week we played like the first, second, and like fourth or fifth team in the end of the season standings, we finished 6th, which got us in the last position in the playoffs. But we had just a really difficult stretch of 3 games in a row against the toughest opponents, and, you know, we're worn down, and you reverse the schedules and you look what they had, and it was like we were their only game of the week. So definitely making sure the roster is groomed properly for those weeks is extremely important. So that's maybe something from an organizational standpoint that we need to do better for next season. And, you know, we were able to overcome it by simply just having good players and end up playing really well during that stretch. Really unlucky, but at the, you know, I think we got, like, you know, we tied one of the games and really close games in the other. So that was more so just, we have some very good players in the team. And then maybe from, you know, an on-field standpoint, I think because of the schedule of the season, we didn't get to use as many of the younger players that we had on in the fall and the spring. So that's certainly going to be more of a point of emphasis for this upcoming year, is getting some of the youth players more involved.
Yeah, for sure. And in regards to the men's team for the UPSL, are there any sort of announcements, or because we're slowly creeping up already into, you know, the beginning of the fall season, what should fans be on the lookout for the next season in terms of what time in late August or September should we, you know, start to see some news or schedules pop out?
Yeah, you probably start to see it early August. Even though we're playing in season, we almost use fall as like a preseason slash trial season. And then spring is the competitive season. There's going to be some announcements coming up here, hopefully by mid-August. Can't quite say them yet, but I think the community will be happy about it. And then one of our goals, as always, is just how can we have more of an impact and reach into the community. We've done a really good job up to date, but there's always room for improvement. One of the areas we want to do is just try and get some free skills clinics out there, just getting more exposure to the game for the kids in Davis, mostly on 12 and younger. So that's probably going to be a really big push for this upcoming fall, is really trying to get some more of those younger players inspired about the game, because everybody knows what's coming in 2026 with the World Cup. And we want to really try and push those players, the youngest ones, to grasp the game and to start watching when it hits America in a couple of years.
Yeah, that's for sure. So now let's talk a little bit about the women's team, who had a phenomenal season in the WPSL Pac North. As I mentioned earlier in the intro, you know, they went undefeated, 6 wins and 3 draws. So how would you, you know, rate the success of the team? And this season, they're unlike the men's team, you know, they just played the spring season in the WPSL. How do you rate the season as a whole compared, you know, to expectations in the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I think, you know, every year we kind of take it, you know, you want to try and do well. We, you know, we try within the organization, we're always like, our first goal is, you know, you go out in the field and you try and win games. The women's season is a little bit different than the men, because even though we're working tooth and nail to try and get it done, there's no extended season for women yet. And really in Northern California, SoCal's really caught on and it's starting to get good, but NorCal's definitely a laggard in this area. So the season's, you know, really short. It's like 7-8 weeks long. And there's a ton packed into it during that period of time. And, you know, at the beginning of the season, just because players graduate or they're leaving their college teams or they're in college and they're coming back at so many different points throughout the season, it becomes really difficult to get like that team chemistry and that bond that really helps teams excel when they're on the field, because you're going to experience some difficult times throughout the course of the season on the pitch. And if you can't look over and really say, hey, I really know this player, I trust them, it can become difficult to really see out games. And so going into this year, I think we were quietly confident because we had a lot of players who had been through it before, like Tiffany Miras, Vince Naylor, like just really good players that have played within the team for a couple of years that understood what it took to do well, not only at the level, but also what the season is with midweeks and weekend games pretty much every single week. And so we were quietly confident, but I think they exceeded our expectations in terms of their consistency. And the reason why they were consistent is because Coach Pip and Coach Zach were really able to pad the roster with players who fit what we were trying to accomplish and also get the team to bond in a unique way. And that led to a lot of consistency every single game. And when you combine that with well-placed new additions and players who have been around for a while, you know, you wind up with a team who is, you know, in first place for most of the season.
Yeah, that's for sure. And as I mentioned in the intro, you know, they finished tied for first, but California Storm ultimately getting the nod with goal differential. So, and California Storm is technically the crosstown rival. They're technically based in Sacramento, but they play all their games at Legacy Fields. Over the years, how would you say that your sort of a rivalry brewing with the California Storm has treated FC Davis and, you know, the organization as a whole?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, that's what the game is about. Like, we talked about it just like on the men's side. It's the same for the women. You know, people love seeing big name matchups against, you know, like a San Francisco team or an LA team. Like, that's fun and that's great for, hey, there's a big weekend, let's all build towards it and go watch the game. But soccer is about local rivalry. You know, you go to some of these other countries, it's like the top half in an apartment complex roots for a different team than the bottom half. And, you know, then there's all these, you know, shenanigans that happen during the course of the week when they play each other. It's like, that's what it should be about. And that's what it is about. So the Storm are a little bit different in terms of like, they're based in Sac, but they play in Davis. So is it a crosstown rivalry? Is it a causeway? It's like, it's all mumbled and jumbled. At the end of the day, I think it's just like, we're in close proximity. So people are going to know that. And let's go out there and give a good match to the fans. And that what would be great if there was a longer season and you could play each team twice, home and away, because then you can really build the storylines for these matches. So it becomes a little bit different with a shot in the arm. We were lucky that the last game of the season was against the Storm. And if we would have won, we would have won the title. You know, we tied 1-1. We had a boatload of chances, hit the post a couple times. So the soccer gods weren't in our favor for that match. But those are the most fun games, regardless of standings. Like, we could have played them. They could have been a last place. That still would have been the most fun game, because you really want to play the local derbies. That's what makes the game tick.
Yeah, that's for sure. And the season ends on, you know, with a very successful campaign for both sides. So what, as we transition into the next year for FC Davis, both for the women as well, you already mentioned some of the things that we should be on the lookout for the men, but just for FC Davis as a whole in the community, what should the fans be excited for the 2025 campaign?
Yeah. So for next season, you know, for the men, we touched upon it briefly. Definitely want to, like, in the fall, get way more involved in the youth. We're going to start doing more projects with AYSO United in Davis, which you're familiar with that club intimately. And it's a great, you know, there's just so many kids that play soccer and for AYSO, from the core program with Davis AYSO to AYSO United. There's the Alliance program mixed in there. There's an adult program, which is flourishing. And it's really mobilized. You're going to see a big mobilization push this year to really ingrain FC Davis into AYSO. We've done it in, you know, chunks and pieces, but now there's going to be a more concentrated effort to really make it one. So those kids have something to aspire to, and the adults have something to go watch. So it's going to be, I think that's, for our community, the most exciting part. And then in 2025 is when we're going to start rolling out a lot of World Cup planning for the upcoming season. We want to make sure that's really dialed in, not only with our organization, AYSO, but also with the business community as well. And really setting an early tone of what we want to see from Davis and coming out and supporting the teams. And then for the women specifically, they need a longer season. They have to push past that. And I know I sound like a broken record, but they have to push past that 8-week summer short burst schedule. There has to be, you know, a longer fall season, spring season. It helps with player pools. It helps keep players involved in the game longer. We've been trying to build it for a couple of years. We've been really close a couple of times, but my fingers are crossed that next year in 2025 is when you'll start to see that roll out. So that's going to completely change the women's landscape in Northern California.
For sure. It sounds like a lot of cool things are coming for the community that we should be excited for. So thank you so much, Adam, for your time and joining me on Time Out Radio today. And great to talk to you as usual.
Yeah. And as always, good seeing you. And go Bears/Ags.
Yeah. Go Bears and Ags. I will always be an Aggie by heart. So that's Adam Lewin from FC Davis.
In today's travel segment, we visit the country of Switzerland. Located in Central Europe and bordered by France, Germany, Liechtenstein, Austria, and Italy. The country is home to 8.8 million people and has three official national languages, German, French, and Italian. Its capital is Bern and its largest city is Zurich. Switzerland is the oldest democracy in the world. The Swiss Confederation was founded in 1291. The country is known for staying neutral in international conflicts, such as World War I and World War II. Because of its political stance, Switzerland has been the home of international organizations such as the United Nations, the World Health Organization, the Red Cross, and the World Trade Organization. Switzerland is one of the richest countries in the world. Its watchmaking industry is famous for high-quality brands. Swiss banks draw customers from around the world because of their strict privacy and security policies. Switzerland is a great place for chocolate lovers. The average Swiss person eats about 20 pounds of chocolate each year. That comes to more than 100 chocolate bars. Milk chocolate was invented in Vevey, Switzerland in 1875 by Daniel Peter to try to make dark chocolate less bitter. Don't have a sweet tooth? There's plenty of cheese there. With its many cheese-based foods such as fondue, rösti, and raclette, the average Swiss person consumes 50 pounds of cheese a year. The country makes about 450 varieties of cheese, such as Emmental, Gruyere, and Appenzeller. After you've had your share of chocolate and cheese, you can walk them off by visiting Switzerland's many scenic lakes and mountains. The country is home to 1,500 lakes, which include Lake Geneva, Lake Zurich, Lake Constance, and Lake Lugano. Three quarters of Switzerland is covered by the Alps, and its highest mountain is the Matterhorn, which stands at 14,692 feet above sea level. The country has more than 300 ski resorts and 4,500 miles of slopes where you can go skiing, snowboarding, and sledding. You can explore all of these attractions by rail. Switzerland has more than 3,000 miles of railway tracks, and its train system is efficient and punctual. The country also has the world's deepest and longest railway tunnel, the Gotthard Base Tunnel. It runs for 35 miles under the Swiss Alps and connects the northern and southern parts of the country. You know what else has been running for a while? Timeout Radio. We've been on air for 4 years, and the next episode is our final one as I head to college where I have another project in the works. So stay tuned for Timeout Radio's 100th episode in a couple of weeks. So that's going to wrap up our journey to our place of the week, the country of Switzerland. All right, let's call a timeout for Timeout Radio. This was your host, Rohan Bakshi. You're listening to KDIRT 95.7 FM, where the grassroots grow. Have a great day, everyone.